This is Geneva Keeper Wiskeman. I'm here at 503 Curtis Road in East Lansing on a hot, muggy July 17th, 1990. And I'm talking today with Donna Warbach, and that's
W-E-R-B-A-C-K.
I'm saying it.
Warbach.
Warbach, not Warbach. Okay. We were really introduced in absentia by Jane Ingersoll Pyatt. How did you meet Jane, though?
We were in high school together. Graduated together in 1926.
Oh, here in Lansing?
We met in a Latin class.
Oh, then you've been friends for a long time.
Yes, indeed.
Well, indeed. You were in the military, too.
Yes, Jane and I went in together. And then it was the Army, really, that separated us, because she went with the group that became, well, she was assigned to Air Force bases, and I was at Army headquarters in Columbus for 3 years, so that has made a difference.
But you've retained your friendship all through this time.
And
I know from talking with Jane that she had some interest in moral rearmament in the early days, but can you tell me how you were introduced to that organization?
Well, it was Jane who introduced me to it. I did not know about moral rearmament when it first came into Michigan, but in the first year after I was in the Army, it was 1946-47, I was a graduate student at the University of Michigan, and it was while I was in the South on a spring break that year, it would have been early 1947, that MRA brought a review called Ideas Have Legs to Lansing. They gave it in Grand Rapids and Lansing and Detroit that I know of. There may have been other places, I'm not sure. But at that time, Jane first met them. And when I returned from my vacation in the South on a Sunday, I found that two of the MRA people had been spending the weekend with Jane out at her River's Bend home, and I have known them ever since. In fact, one of those two people is still my closest friend down at Fort Myers Beach.
Where you now reside.
Yes, yes. So that was our introduction to it, and Jane and I both went together to the MRA Training Center at Mackinac later that summer, along in August, at the end of August, I think. So we met it together, actually. I always say Jane was the one who introduced me to it.
Uh-huh. Well, it was an interesting world movement, and maybe I shouldn't be saying the word was. Is it still a remnant of it still exists?
It still is very much. They don't have any headquarters at Mackinac anymore, but they're busy in other parts of the world. And right now they have a very important summer conference and training session going on at Co in Switzerland.
Yeah, Mountain House?
You know about Co and how to spell it and all that?
Yes,
okay.
C-A-U-X.
That's right. Just wanted to be sure.
Yes,
this
I appreciate
year, of course,
that
is particularly significant because they have great numbers of people from Eastern Europe who are able to come. There were quite a few last summer, and that may have had some influence during their fight for independence during this past year. This year, of course, it's a chance to give them training in nation building and how they can have the governments that they want and need.
My interest in moral rearmament was rekindled because Blanche Coogan had done research in association with Forrest, her son, at the State Archives when I worked there as archivist. And Blanche, you know, died in March of this year, and her son Forrest was executor. So it was good faith, I think, that brought the manuscript that she had prepared back to Forrest, and he brought it to me. I recently allowed it, with his permission, to go to Dr. Philip Mason, who's on the board of the Wayne State University Press, thinking mm-hmm. that perhaps it might have merit for a small publication. We really need to bring it up to date. Some of her material was written about 1959.
Yes.
But there's a whole story that goes beyond what she had written.
Mm-hmm.
But according to what I have read, the MRA were holding assemblies as early as 1928 and came into Detroit in the 30s. And eventually,
yes, that's true. I never heard of them at that time, but I think that's
they
true.
Went up to Mackinac about 1942.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did you spend any other time beyond that one training session at Mackinac?
Oh, yes. I was there for long weekends quite frequently, and it wasn't really until about 1953 that I began to feel that I had a part in it myself,
mm-hmm.
and spent longer and longer vacations there. And then in 1958, I took leave from my position in the Michigan State Budget Office and went to Mackinac to devote full time to it, to the MRA work. I worked primarily in the finance office, although that really was not the main point of my being there. It was to help other people and myself to learn more how to live under the guidance of God,
mm-hmm.
which was, of course, the whole point of the training center there.
Yes, their focus was on absolute honesty, purity, unselfishness, and love.
That's right.
That's
That goes a long way.
Big ideology.
One of the first thoughts that came to me was that that honesty and unselfishness and so on were not the main point. It was that word absolute. You come right down to it. Because we don't live in an absolute world these days, you know.
No.
So this is the main difference.
And your talents developed in the budget department for the state of Michigan transferred, that was something you could contribute wisely.
Yes and no, because so often when there was a real need to do something, you didn't plan for it months ahead because the need was right now and you took action on it and mm-hmm. raised the money and did it.
With all volunteer contributions, wasn't it?
Yeah, primarily, yes. I mean, we had to hire some of the work people around the Mackinac Center there,
mm-hmm.
but most of the people who were with it full time were certainly just contributing their time and
mm-hmm.
all of their efforts and so on.
Well, and I know that in 1958, Blanche wrote that there were 5,500 delegates that came there. This was attracted people from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
You must have met some interesting personalities.
Oh, we did.
Can you recall some of those?
Well, I remember particularly, it was the end of the 1958 season when they decided to film the musical play. I can't even think of the name of it.
Well, there was
one
about that time called Mackinac Island of Renaissance.
Yeah, that was one of the shorter films.
Was it? There was Crowning.
Crowning Experience is the name I'm trying to think of. And at the end of Crowning Experience, in the final film, there is a big scene of the international get together, the meeting up there, and we filmed that first in September of 1958. We had people from every continent there, from Africa, North Africa, many Asians, many kinds of Europeans, and American Indians, and whatnot. I one time said that I couldn't get mad at any of these countries because they were the home of some of my friends. it was very true in many ways.
Yeah.
One thing I particularly remember from that time when we had so many others there, they had quite a few Muslims there, and this man from, was either Tunis or Algeria, I can't remember which, I mean, Tunisia or Algeria. And it was just the first day of one of their feast seasons. May have been the beginning of Ramadan. I've never checked to see, but I know it was in September. But he was going on. We met at 7:30 and 11 and 5 each day when the real training sessions were on. And he was going off to pray for the day, so he just came to the 7:30 meeting and then left us. But while he was there, he was telling about the importance of sacrifice, and he illustrated it by telling the story of Abraham taking Isaac to the mountaintop, being ready to sacrifice him if that was what God willed him to do. And I thought, how utterly amazing to have a Muslim here telling us a story from Jewish history to an audience that's largely Christian. And you realize it's something we all share. So, I mean, that's the kind of unity we need in the world.
Mm-hmm. Are you still active as a participant, or do you?
I haven't gone in recent years to any training sessions. I'm sort of physically beyond that.
Oh.
And.
But your interest is not waning, has it?
That's right. You have it exactly right.
In reading Blanche's manuscript, she referred to this crowning experience, which was really the story of Mary McLeod Bethune.
Yes, Forrest Coburn was there at the time we were making these films, the crowd scenes particularly. He's in the background and one of them sort of see the top of his head. I think I'm in the top of my head, got in a couple of places too.
Well, there are several films. There was African Tale, and then they did the plays that weren't transferred to film, too. They had several plays.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Ideas Have Legs was their first musical.
I think that's right, yeah.
Previewed in Grand Rapids, I mm-hmm. think. Mm-hmm. And there was a program, Forrest sent me a note from the Grand Rapids paper just within the last month,
mm-hmm.
that there was a special play given in Grand Rapids, and originating from this cluster in, is it southwestern United States where the activity is now headquartered?
No, not really. In the United States, there's quite an active group in Minneapolis especially, and there's another group that's been in Richmond, and another group around the Boston area, centered among the Harvard students. And then, of course, they have the offices for MRA in the United States are in Washington, so.
Washington, D.C.?
Yes.
Ah. I'd like
so
to
things have changed a lot since 1959 or 60.
Yes, yes.
We found we were putting too much money into supporting real estate and not enough into getting out where the people were.
Ah.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. Where did you stay when you were on the island? Did you stay at the island house or in one of the dorms?
I've stayed in all of them over the years.
Mm.
Altogether, I was on the island from 1958 to 1970. And I mean, I'd be away for a few weeks at a time, but I boated up there, so that was my home.
Oh, uh-huh.
And I stayed in most of the buildings that were related to moral rearmament, and some others, I guess. I can't remember now.
Yes, well, there are a lot of different changes there through the years.
Yes.
What would you say would be some of the highlights of your experience, Donna? What stands out as you look back without a lot of time to think
well,
about
it? Well, I think those international conferences that I've just been talking about were probably the most important thing that happened during my years there. Of course, a lot of what went on then at Mackinac is now happening either at TCO in Switzerland, or there is a similar conference center that's been built in India, which is very much a center for the Asians and for Australians and so on. I mean, it's regional.
They did have a center in the Philippines too. I wonder if that still exists.
No, that never was really a major center. It was very active there, but only for a couple of years, I think.
And then there was the Rife Valley Center in Africa, and I don't know whether that exists anymore or not.
I don't know either.
Perhaps I can
contact. I think that was on somebody's farm there, and whether it still exists with all the political changes, I don't know.
There's been so much going on in the world. Uh-huh. What a time for you to look back over history.
Well, that's true.
Just exciting.
It was a great privilege to be part of it. Mm-hmm. So,
Forrest has told me that he spent several months on the island. I think he wintered over on the island.
I think he did. I think he came there just about the time we started filming The Crowning Experience in the fall of 1958 and stayed through until the next spring sometime or other. I can't remember when it was.
Mm-hmm.
His brother had been there during the summer, you know.
Oh.
Did Forrest tell you that?
Well, seems like he mentioned that his brother was active in it, but I don't know which one, which brother.
Oh, he has more than one? I only knew about one, the one who was head of Convair up in San Diego.
Okay, that's the one. Well, he had lost a brother earlier, too, and maybe I have that confused in my mind. Yeah. Well, they'd been doing, apparently, a lot of building up there in 55 and 56. They built a great hall and that type of thing.
Yes.
And they own property in other cities, as I understand it. So they did have a lot of property, and that took maintenance, didn't it, though?
Mm-hmm.
Richard Tegstrom is a name that comes to mind. Did you meet him up there?
Not formally, but we're all living in the same community. So I saw him at work often. He was very sweet. I never can remember whether he's Swedish or Norwegian. Anyhow, he had come. His specialty had been filming wildlife and nature and things of that kind, which he did for Walt Disney Studios. And that was when some of the MRA people had met him.
Mm-hmm.
And so he went to Africa with them when they were filming the film Freedom, which was filmed in Nigeria. And so then he and his wife came to Mackinac just so he could film The Crowning Experience. A very gifted man. I don't know what's ever become of him, whether he's still filming or not.
I wonder what happened to the assets, the film. Do these copies of these masters of these films and the scenarios, scripts for this play still exist?
I'm sure they do, but I haven't any idea where they are.
They must have an important archive somewhere.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to find out about that.
I think they would have had that in Los Angeles, probably, which was where more of the film final production and editing and so on was done out there, and duplicating, all that final business was filmmaking.
Technical work.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. There was a lot of politics going on through all those years between the city of Mackinac Island and the State Parks Commission, and I read how the deed passed from this. Let's see, the Island House particularly was a focus of controversy for a long time. Do you remember much about that?
Not really, because it was mostly before my time. I know that the Island House, during the Depression years, had reverted to the state for non-payment of taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And it stood empty, and then in 1940, I guess it was, or 42, 41, you probably read it, it may be in Blanche's manuscript, I can't remember, about how MRA happened to go to Mackinac, that the Park Commission, on behalf of the state, offered the use of the Island House. These two MRA, and it was used for several years. I'm just trying to remember. I didn't get there the first time until 1947.
Well, that
so
was
they
about,
had it for about 5 years at one.
The State Park Commission, I think, in acquired it by deed in 47, and then they leased it to MRA.
Oh, they did acquire it then, I see. Yeah.
They leased it to MRA prior to sale, and then there seemed to be a discussion about whether it should private property, public property, should be used for private uses and so on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Of course, a lot of unusual things go on at Mackinac Island. I mean, with all that is there that has been made available to the friends of the park commissioners and so on, as you say, lots of politics involved.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Did you ever run into a Reverend Ling, L-I-N-G?
Well, Father Ling was the longtime Catholic priest there. I didn't know him personally, but a lot of my friends did.
Mm-hmm. Were there other
he was a very good friend of Frank Bookman, who was head of Moral Armament.
Oh, they were very friendly?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there were not many churches on the island. They only have about 500. At that time, they had about 500 population, would you think, a native population, about that?
I would guess.
How many people were there for MRA? Do you have any idea?
Well, it varied greatly from
yeah,
time to time. Sometimes
transitory.
It would be down to 5 or 10 people, but when you take a review off on the road. And
mm-hmm.
So, and when we'd have a really big weekend up there, there could be 1,000 people there at the MRA Center. Of course, there were more after we built the Cedar Point buildings, the Great Hall and so on. There were more than there ever were in the Island House days. So suddenly the state decided that they didn't want MRA in the Island House anymore. I don't remember whether that was 49 or 50, somewhere along in there, which sort of forced them to provide their own facilities. By that time, several of the people had bought different pieces of property up there, and they sort of put it all together and built some new buildings.
Mm-hmm.
It was just about the time that I got really interested in it.
Have you been back to the island recently?
I was there last summer for a long weekend. We had a small liberal arts college there using these facilities from 1965 to 70. And the students had a 5-year reunion last year.
Oh.
So there were great numbers of them there. Of course, there were some of the MRA people who were there, others who had never had any connection with MRA, but had been at Mackinac College. So that was my last visit. I must say it's being used very nicely at present. The people that own the Great Hall buildings there have modernized them and painted them, and everything looked very nice.
Mm-hmm. You weren't disappointed in what you saw there?
I was not. You know, there are always some people who think, isn't it awful, it isn't like the old days. So
sometimes the old days aren't that perfect, except in memory.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's one of the brilliant.
But it really served its purpose very much. You see, as Blanche may have said in her manuscript, the Island House and all the program there was really the inspiration for Mountain House at Cope. And of course, that has gone on to be practically a world capital. And it's much more convenient to get to for all of the people from Africa and Asia. And the Near East and the Middle East. They've always had a lot of them, and this year from Eastern Europe. And you sort of feel God's timing in it, that at Island House we learned how to do it, and at Mountain House you get the fruition of it. So there are lots of other centers around the world that, you know, you forget, because the British have two important centers. One is their theater and arts center in downtown London, and the other is an estate up at up near Chester, Chirley Garth, and that is used a lot for weekend conferences, and it's right in the Midlands, in the center of England, so that it's convenient for bringing people in there by the busload, or of course now with air travel you can have a whole European conference there over a weekend.
Of course it all started in England, called the Oxford Group originally.
That was where that term came from. And I think really in many ways the scope of Frank Bookman's thinking and doing did start in those Oxford days, although you can go back and trace it to his time at Penn State University just before World War I, when he had a lot of experience in training young men in how to depend on God and follow his directions. As that puts it.
Were you affiliated with a traditional church, such as?
Oh yeah, I belonged to People's Church here for roughly about 50 years altogether.
Uh-huh.
Finally, I moved to Florida in 1974, and became active in the church there at the beach called Chapel by the Sea. And I finally wanted to transfer my membership down there, so I had to pull out. I had been an affiliate member down there because I wanted to retain my membership up here. And I thought, this is kind of silly. I'd only get up there once or twice a year. Why do I prolong it?
So, you come here to Dorothy Wright's home, your sister.
Yeah.
Well, this is a lovely place to visit here.
It certainly is. Yeah.
It's like being in the country almost, but you have all the advantages of downtown East Lansing.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. Well, what do you see ahead for MRA, Donna? What do you think?
I don't know.
What's going to happen? Do you have any idea of these challenges that we're all
this
facing?
This is one time when you can say the Lord only knows. Be truthful about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think so often of that line in, I can't remember whereabouts in the Bible it is, the Spirit listeth where he will and nobody can say.
Yeah.
That's about it. This is the hardest thing for modern people to accept, I think, is that you don't have it all planned out in a hard and fast way. You move on what the Spirit says. It's the quicker policy, what do I mean?
Philosophy.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. That it all depends on where the Spirit leads you.
Mm-hmm.
And that certainly has been true. You know, during Frank Bookman's last years, he would often be congratulated for all that he had accomplished. And his only reply was, I have been wonderfully led. So, it's so true.
Well, much that we plan does not happen, and we don't even know where our motivation comes from sometimes,
mm-hmm.
but much of it is it's counseling young people about what they're going to do in the world. I'm always so amazed when we say to young kids, you know, 15, 16, what are you going to grow up to be?
Yeah.
And they take it as, well, I'm going to be a doctor, a lawyer, a merchant, a chief. and to be.
Yeah.
It all happens quite without our control sometimes,
that's,
doesn't
that's
it?
That's so true, yes.
That's what you're saying.
We get to the point where our memories, our minds begin to pick.
We're doing a Voices of Lansing project, Donna. I got some people like the History Committee, the Chamber of Commerce, and the library together, and we're interviewing people who have contributions to the community and memory of changes through it. And we'll never live long enough to interview all the people we should, let alone those that we really know about. Each interviewer knows 10 people that are vital to our memory, and there's so much that has not been written down. And we do transcribe these interviews, and then we ask you to sign a release so that they can be used, because without that release you can't even legally listen to them, you know. And they would be put in the public library with a transcript and your release, so that people could use it for scholarly and historical purposes. Isn't that important? And I really appreciate your sharing your memory with us, because I don't know of anybody in Lansing now, except you and Jane. I'm sure there are other people who were very active. Forrest is mentioned in Mr. Snell.
Yeah, I was just going to mention them. They live here in East Lansing.
They're still here.
Yeah, they're here.
Do you know if they're still active in the movement in any way?
No. I mean, they're in the same situation that I am.
Mm-hmm.
He is a professional engineer, a retired engineer, I should say, but he has interests down in Belize.
Mm-hmm.
His thought was that the people in Central America needed to have businesses, industries, or whatever you call them, established that would give them jobs and that they could carry on.
Mm-hmm.
So he and a few associates started a shrimp farm along the coast of Belize.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's grown and grown, and they have a real business going down there. He wants to sell that now to someone else, so he can go on into new fields.
Well, how exciting. I have to contact him.
Yeah, she's here most of the time. He's down there about half the time, but as of yesterday, they were both still in town.
Well, good. I'll follow up on that.
Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, this book is theirs. This is the American edition of the biography of Frank Bookman.
Oh, On the Tail of a Comet, the Life of Frank Bookman.
The English version came out three or four years ago, I think. I think, doesn't that have the Snell
name? Oh, yes, it says John Snell, 918 Rosewood, East Lansing.
Yeah.
Oh, this is by Garth Lean, L-E-A-N.
Yes.
Published in Colorado Springs. I'm going to have to look this up.
It would be a good, I don't know whether the library would have it yet, but it would be a good one for them to have there, because it's very good.
Here it's got the ISBN, 093-9443-074. That new international standard book number we can order so easily.
I know, it's
this is not copyrighted 1988.
Yeah.
Oh, I must get this and pursue this.
So many of the books that were written about Frank Bookman were inclined to be, you might say, adulatory. I mean, it accented the positive all the time. And Garth Lean has done a very fair job of taking all of the negatives and meeting them head on. And if it was a time when Frank Bookman or Morrow Ehrman were wrong or slightly wrong or whatever, he said so. And I think all of us who have had any association with it have appreciated that in reading the book.
Well, I suppose his Bookman's quotation being quoted as being supportive of Adolf Hitler back in 38, 39 would be a definite negative.
I think that's dealt with in there.
Mm, good.
You know, it's very interesting. I don't know whether Blanche has mentioned Tom Driberg or not.
Driberg?
D-R-I-B-E-R-G. He was a man who was very active in British politics and worked his way up in the Anglican Church, I mean, the Church of England. And he took exception to the teaching that God could change a person. And he fought all his life against Bookman and all that he stood for. But it wasn't, and Driberg has died in the last few years. And then all the truth came out about his homosexuality and his lies about the work of MRA and all the rest.
He was an attacker for...
Yeah.
Spent his career attacking.
He wrote a book telling all the wrong things, you see, as if it were true. And then he not only did that, but he came to this country, went around to library after library and put the book in all the libraries. I have a friend in Canada who taught library science for many years and is very knowledgeable about book things and so on. And she was working on it and would get printouts from the librarians who had this computer access, I can't remember what it's called nationally, but she asked for a list of all the books that had, all of the libraries that had Driberg's book in it. Practically everyone had it. Mm-hmm. Or if she asked about what they had on the subject of this MRA or book, MRA. And it came out, library after library had this book. Well, now she and others have been working to get this into every library on the same basis. Because it needs to be there so that people can read the whole truth of the matter.
The balanced story.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. I think the thing that is hardest for people to understand and accept, and the hardest thing for those of us who have been active with it and should know better, is that it's not an organization. It's really not a movement as such, as we think of them. We think of it as a group of people. And the same friend of mine who did his work with the libraries a few years ago wrote out a definition for moral rearmament, which I think pretty well hits it, and I meant to get this copied out so I could give it to you, a copy on one of these larger sheets.
Do you have it there to read, Donna?
Yeah. The machine is on, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, she said, moral rearmament is a worldwide network of friends who are eager to be channels of caring and responsibility and reconciliation and inspiration for mankind, and who therefore are eager to accept continuously within themselves the changing and reconciling and inspiring spirit and direction of God. I think that pretty well covers the dimensions of it.
Indeed.
It is a matter of individuals, really.
And who is the person who wrote that?
Her name is Geraldine Hughes. And I think that came to her when she was at Code 2 or 3 years ago. And she may have refined it a bit after talking with other people and sharing it with them. So.
You have a notebook here. Is that sort of your chapbook? Did you write down special?
Well, it is at this point. Actually, this notebook was given to me by a business and professional women's group down in Naples, Florida.
It's nice to have a book like that that you can put down a favorite poem or or a thought, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you carry that with you. That's nice.
So, now, did you have any other questions here?
Well, you've answered a lot of them. I'm pleased to know about this book, the biography of Bookman. Did Did you have a scrapbook there? Is that something that you wanted to show me?
No, this is my work. This is my scrapbook from my days in the military.
Oh.
1942 to 1946. And in the summer of 1946, when I was first out, I started putting things in here, but I never got around to pasting them in. Mm-hmm. My family had given me the scrapbook the winter before. So I'm getting it ready so that a grandniece of mine can do the pasting in and putting in captions and things like that. I got just that far last night. So
be very careful the kind of paste you use, because it can yellow and destroy the paper so easily.
I know. I threw away some clippings that had been stuck together with scotch tape that turned yellow and brittle. And
yes.
So
sometimes they either turn brittle, that adhesive tape, or then they melt.
Yeah, and mess the whole thing up. Well, fortunately, the one that I found there that had been stuck together, I had another copy of it, had not been stuck together, so I just threw one of them out.
Today, we can microfilm the materials, and that gives you a good security copy, because your story, as you record it in your scrapbook, is going to be very rewarding to people.
Reading all of these news articles, I have what seem like endless clippings, which of course are probably available elsewhere. We don't need the same story from the Chicago Tribune.
Mm-hmm.
And the Detroit Free Press, and the Detroit News, and the Detroit Times, and the State Journal. I discovered that the day that they opened the WAC Training Center, I think every paper carried the same stuff. So I'm sort of throwing out some of those things, which helps. But I had just stuck it all into a folder or something. I can't remember how I collected it all in my travels.
But it's especially valuable because it's all brought together, and it's brought together by you, the participant at the time.
Yes, yes.
Very important. Yes, I'm glad you're doing that. Do you have a similar scrapbook for MRA?
No, I don't. It wouldn't go in a scrapbook, I can tell you that.
Maybe a room.
I have finally thrown out some of the things I collected back in the 1950s. I figured I didn't need to be the MRA archives. I don't know where those are now. Or from Mackinac College. There were some things that were taken from Mackinac to the library at Lake Superior State College. There was primarily the Mackinac College archives. Whether there were any MRA things, I don't know. And I don't know whether the MRA things after that were taken to Allentown, which was Dr. Bookman's original home, which has been turned over to the Lehigh County Historical Society. And they maintain it as a kind of historic place or museum or whatever.
Open to the public?
Yes, now it's open by appointment. The birthplace is... a double house, and one half of it belonged to the Bookman family. And some of Dr. Bookman's friends had bought the other half years before I knew anything about it, but so that people could come and stay in this other half, and they could keep his half as more of a museum. Mm-hmm. And they had had, ever since the Historical Society took it over, they had had one or another of MRA couples or individuals living there who were sort of curators for the thing. I have visited there a couple of times, but as happens so often, the Historical Society found that they were having difficulty maintaining it. So they asked the last curator to leave and said that they would just have one of their volunteers available on certain days.
House museums are very expensive.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm sure they are. I speak as if I had experience, but I know they must be. So, whether there are still any filing cabinets of things there, I'm not sure.
Well, I guess we have a challenge to locate the archives and records. Well, returning to Lansing after wintering away for several years, what do you see as the greatest change, Donna?
Well, it's a different place. That's about it. I think, you know, we're struggling along with things like fixing up the old Capitol instead of building a new one. I think the area around the Capitol complex there, west and south of it, well, all that area, of course, has deteriorated. I'd like to see them have a rebuild Lansing program going to preserve what they have. And I think what they've done with the Capitol is certainly a step in the right direction.
It is a gem of interior design.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, you must
certainly
see it.
Certainly intend to before.
Before you go back.
Yeah. I think my friend Geraldine Hughes will be visiting me here for a few days early in August. And we'll do it then. Last year when she was here, we did get to see the Historical Museum and State Library.
And the new History Center.
Yes. Which is a great thing to have, because I remember way back to when the state office building had the Pioneer Museum down at the end of the hall.
So. Before it went over to the Turner House.
Yes?
Yeah.
Before the fire.
Oh, yes. I worked at the library at the time of the fire in 1951.
You did? Well, you worked right down below me then, because I was in the budget office on the second floor. So.
Library was on the first floor.
Yeah. Used to be very handy when I needed to look something up. I could just go out the back door and down the stairway to the library.
Right.
I'll never forget those newspaper pictures of all of the volumes on the bleachers at the boys' vocational school trying to dry them out. That was an experience.
I was working with steel helmets and boots with a crew from Manpower back in the building, because I was young at that time.
Yeah.
And we were moved. I had the crew that was one of the crews that were moving books out to the bleachers. I never worked long periods in the boys' vocational field house where we set those bleachers up, and we had to turn the books and keep the air circulating through them. That was so exhausting. So many of the librarians were middle aged at that time.
Yeah,
Gail Curtis and Miss Lindo, Coral Lindo, and Louise Hayes was such a gem. I remember one time we had something called P18s. These were pamphlet materials, little monograph type of things. And she was taking care of these, and she found this nice line to hang them on. So she just hung them up like clothes on this, lopped over this line.
Yeah.
Of course, they were dripping wet, and many of them that did not survive, of course, or perhaps shouldn't have, but there were a lot of valuable things lost, too. But then we discovered that the line was an electrical cord.
Oh, joy. So what happened?
Well, we took them down, and nobody got any damage, but we said, Louise, I think, Hazy, we call her affectionately, and we said, Hazy, we think we'll find something else for you to do.
Yeah.
But you had to remember the happy, funny things that happened, or it was such a tragedy, and a tragedy right up to now, because we've never been able to replace the Shakespeare and some of the treasures that we lost. I really grew up.
Was the card catalog preserved?
Oh, yes, at that time.
So you know what you lost.
Well, yeah.
In a sense.
Yes, there were many of those heraldry books and genealogy that were glazed paper, art paper, and when they got damp, they just melted together solid. And I remember going in with 5 inches of water on the floor of the reference department where the genealogies and mm-hmm. the art books, some mm-hmm. of the fine art books, mm-hmm. and general reference tools were. And I try not to think about that too much, but when I walk into the new building, it hits me some days, you know, the long wait from 1951 to mm-hmm. now to build yeah. a library that's yeah. a proper house for our treasures. And but with the MRA, Donna, I find many history books, you know, you can go through old Michigan History Magazine that I see you have here on the bed here.
Yeah.
There's no MRA indexed. It's a little told story.
Yeah. I actually was in on some sessions with Blanche when she was working on her manuscript. And there were some things, the way her interpretation of things went, or what she included, that I felt were a little, not really misleading, and not intentionally wrong, but we tried to help her to sort of steer it a little different angle. And my impression at that time, because I haven't thought of this for 30 years, almost, that she, I don't remember whether she tried to publish it and could not find anybody who would take it. She had something in mind at that time, whether it was some state publication or what. Or, what was I about to say, whether she decided, or she couldn't find anyone, or whether she decided that it had better not be published.
I think it was really the latter. I got yeah. that impression from talking with her, as I remember, Donna, that she didn't think the time was right.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
that to wait would be better. And then she got off on another challenge, was the Underground Railroad.
Oh, yes, I remember.
And that took up most of her time.
Uh-huh.
And I think she just let the MRE story, she brought it to a certain point and let it cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And maybe that was all right.
I would love to have a chance to see it again. Do you have a copy of it now?
I don't. Today, but that mm-hmm. doesn't mean that we can't get one for you,
and yeah.
you might be able to read that and make some comments.
Yeah, I'd like to, and it might refresh my memory on some of these things that mm-hmm. you're slipping on now.
You'd have valuable comments to make on the manuscript.
Yeah, I'd like to see you have a chance to really give the whole story.
Mm-hmm. Blanche's work was certainly a rich beginning.
Yeah. It was very painstaking about money to get all the information and so on.
Mm-hmm.
I think she was working on that just about the time that I decided to leave the state budget office and spend full time at Mackinac. And I think that I talked with her about it some in her home here, or up at Mackinac, when I got to review it, I may have some thoughts on how to clarify the different points that
mm-hmm.
seem a little questionable in the light of history since then.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You can see.
Yes, things written close to the time are different from down the road. Mm-hmm. Memory is farsighted.
Yeah. I think, I plan to leave next Monday, and I will be going to Canada and visiting Geraldine Hughes for 10 days or 2 weeks, and then she is coming back with me. We're both interested in family history materials, and I've gotten to my mother's family were all Canadians, and Geraldine has helped me with research in several Canadian libraries by now, and I want to get up to the Detroit Public Library, where I did a lot 2 years ago on my father's family, who were Germans and came to Detroit in the 1850s. Mm-hmm. So, and Geraldine has a cousin in Windsor that she's been wanting to get to see, who's interested in her family history. So what we plan to do is come from Oakville near Toronto back to Windsor and Detroit and then up here. I think Geraldine will be here for a few days. Yeah. So I will be in touch with you at that time.
Yes, I'd appreciate that.
I will be here the rest of this week, but I think this morning we've covered just about all I can
remember.
Right.
Well, I didn't want to tire you out, but I think your suggestion about the manuscript might be a good memory jogger.
Yeah,
and maybe Geraldine would be.
Well,
some,
it's true.
She'd have some comments that would be different too. Everybody's memory is a little different.
That's right. Remember different things. Of course, there were always so many people at Mackinac who were involved in different things that a lot more was going on than any one person could know about, really.
Yes, I could imagine.
Same way with all of the outreach since then, and the stories of what some of these people have done who were at Coe or at Mackinac back in the early days. It would take a whole library to tell all the stories. But we can sort of narrow it down to what happened in Michigan.
If we can just have insight from people in Michigan,
mm-hmm.
or even in the Lansing area that took part in that, I think we've made a great contribution. I certainly appreciate the time you've taken down and spent with me this morning.
Well, I'm glad to do it.
Delighted to meet you after all these
years.
I know.
Know that we had been through so many things together, these common experiences, like the state building fire.
Yes, and in your genealogy work, you know, we'll probably find out we're related, you know.
You never can tell.
It's a strange thing that we're all one family, we just haven't met them all yet.
Yeah, that's right. I've never heard it put that way, but it's okay.
Remind Geraldine of that and see if she gets discouraged.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
I hope you have too.